from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on this morning's Forum program, artists are often challenged by having to promote their own work, and Austin Kleon, whose first book urged creative types to steal like an artist, is back with advice on how artists can get noticed. Kleon says his tips, which range from teach what you know to learn to take a punch, are palpable to even those who hate self-promotion. If you're an artist, tell us what has worked and what hasn't as far as getting your work noticed. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Austin Kleon joins us for this morning's second Forum Hour, author of the best-selling Steal Like an Artist and the edited volume of poetry, Newspaper Blackout. He's been featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and on PBS and NPR, and has a new book out. It's titled Show Your Work, and we welcome him to this hour Forum. Good to have you here. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we put the question to listeners to tell us what they thought of some of the tips, and we're going to find out what those tips are in the course of this hour, but you can find them online now. But I want to talk to you about – I see the two books you've done. I'm talking not about the edited poetry where you took a bunch of newspapers and just kind of blacked stuff out and made poems out of them.
Right.
But I wanted to talk to you about these two books and begin by talking about what went viral in your work, which was the whole idea of stealing. A lot of people, you know, use words like amateur and stealing, and they're good words to you. You've got a different lexicon here. A lot of people think, I shouldn't steal anybody else's work, and I don't want my work to be stolen.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, like, why do you have to use that word, steal? Why can't you just say, be influenced by an artist, or, you know, take inspiration like an artist? And I say, well, I use that word steal because I'm not very original. You know, Steal Like an Artist happened because I was collecting all these quotes from some of my favorite artists all about, you know, and they all use that word, steal. You know, Woody Allen, I'm a shameless thief. David Bowie, I'm a tasteful thief. You know, all these people were talking about in terms of stealing and thieving. And so I thought, oh, there's something to this.
Good artist copy and great artist steal. Picasso, who did steal a lot from African art.
Right.
You got a lot of these examples. T.S. Eliot, great poet steal versus imitation. So they certainly use the word just like you do. But it seems counterintuitive to many people. You know, the idea that you should take from others as opposed to being original. And a lot of what you write about is demythologizing the idea of this lone artist, you know, up in a garret coming up with these original brilliant epiphanies.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I found interesting in my own work is that the way to originality isn't by cordoning yourself off and staying isolated, but it's actually the way to originality is by embracing a wide range of influences and bringing them into your work. And it's really about the depth and breadth of your influences that makes your work original.
You say nothing is original. And I remember, you know, as a literary guy, somebody once said a long time ago, there are only 8 plots and everything else is kind of a variation of that. So I'm hip to what you're saying here, but you're talking about something you call kind of creative kleptomania. I mean, it's even more than stealing. It's almost compulsive stealing.
Well, it's funny. You know, one of my favorite things about the nothing is original idea is it's not a very original thought. You know, it goes way back to the Egyptians, you know. And creative kleptomania. I mean, I really think the artist has a different way of looking at the world. I mean, the artists that I admire and look up to, try to steal from, they don't really worry about what's good and bad in the culture. They don't separate it between high and low or worthy or unworthy. You know, they're just looking for stuff that they can use.
They're collectors,
you say.
Not hoarders, but collectors.
Yeah,
you make
collectors.
That distinction. Yeah, and you know, selectively collect.
They selectively collect. They're looking for the things that really resonate with them and the things that they really love. And in the act of collecting, that jump starts the work. You know, I think of someone like local artist Lisa Congdon. You know, she's doing her own work, but she also has these amazing collections that she, you know, displays. And I think that her collecting, you know, weaves right into her original work.
Yeah, we've had her on Forum, and her work is certainly original. Where's the line, though, to plagiarism or to stealing as opposed to, you know, ripping somebody off. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of examples come to mind. I won't necessarily catalog them, but, you know.
Yeah, I think it's all about transformation. And that's why I try to emphasize in my work. It's about stealing things from your favorite people or taking things from the world and then smashing it together with other things you've stolen or transforming it in some way, you know, turning it into your own thing, adding something to it that the world doesn't have yet. You know, if you're merely imitating something, you're not really contributing anything new to the culture. But if you take something, you steal something, you know, transform it, disfigure it, so to speak, you know, and put it back into the world as something new.
In fact, I look at your definition of creativity, taking what's in front of you and transforming it into something we didn't have before.
Yeah, I mean, I think so much of the work that we look at is, you know, it's about, again, this concept of originality. It's really about making connections. You know, it's about taking those things that are already in the world and spinning them into your own thing.
Well, speaking of making connections, as I say, I see these two books sort of connecting. And the new book says, you may hate self-promotion, but show your stuff. You say Twitter's like my coffee shop, Instagram's my sketchbook, my Tumblr blog is like an open swipe file and pin board, and so it goes. I mean, get yourself out there. But again, a lot of people would be saying, I'm afraid to do that because I'm going to get ripped off.
Right, yeah. My favorite quote on the subject is from Howard Aiken. He says, don't worry about people stealing your ideas. If your ideas are any good, you'll have to shove them down people's throats, you know. But I think what artists are facing, you know, the potential of being ripped off, you know, a lot of times what I say is you wish you were out there enough so that people would rip you off. You know, the big battle is not getting ripped off. The big battle is your obscurity. You know, not even being out there to get ripped off in the first place.
Well, it's also the difference, and I like what you say about between the noun and the verb. I mean, a lot of people say they're artists. In fact, you begin this new book with a quote from Balzac about artists, and the fact of the matter is that a lot of people use that word pretty promiscuously or almost indiscriminately. Editorial comment from Krasny.
Right.
but, you know, you say, you know, do some dumpster diving for inspiration. Use YouTube, all those kinds of things. There's stuff that's at newspapers, which you use. I mean, stuff that's out there for you to use and for you to avail yourself of, but create.
Yeah, people get really focused on the noun, like, oh, I'm an artist or I'm a writer. And then they don't think about actually making art or writing, right? The verbs of it. I mean, the verb is what you have to fall in love with, the process of the work and not just the product. And I think it's so important in creative work just to figure out what your verb is and then to figure out a way to have that verb in your life every day. And then if you turn into a noun, that's great. But what's important is to keep doing the verb.
Yeah, I keep thinking about all those people who say, I'm an artist. I said it for years.
Yeah.
You know? And to sit down and create the stuff is a very different story. We both admire Linda Barry. Why do you so greatly admire Linda Barry?
So when I was in my early 20s, I was living in Cleveland. And I was just out of college.
You were living in Cleveland?
I was living
in Cleveland.
In Cleveland Heights, actually.
That's where I come from.
Really?
Really. Yeah,
oh,
we'll talk
about that. Okay, we'll talk about that later. But so I met a terrific, you know, I was struggling to figure out how to put pictures and words together. Because, you know, when you start out when you're a kid, your pictures and words are together. You know, you're copying Garfield comics on your grandmother's kitchen floor with butcher paper and crayons, you know, and you're making illustrated books at school, and pictures and words are together. And then as the educational system goes on, they split them apart. So anyway, I met a fantastic writer named Dan Shawn, who teaches at Oberlin College. And he said, you have to meet this woman, Linda Barry. You would love her. And I went to see her speak, and I got to go to the bar with her for 2 hours. And I feel like getting to know her and her work and what she does with pictures and words together, I'm basically running my whole career off the fumes of just spending 2 hours with her. I mean, it was a really magical.
What an inspiration. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really magical experience for me.
Well, she's very talented. I actually used some of her graphic fiction in a textbook I did with Maggie Sokolik from UC Berkeley. But a lot of this is telling good stories, isn't it? I mean, a lot of promoting yourself is telling good stories and being able to take your work out and speak about it and disseminate information about it in ways that are, again, counter to the whole idea of the work speaks for itself.
Yeah, I mean, artists love to trot out that tired line, right? The work speaks for itself. But I think that, you know, the work doesn't speak for itself. So much of what we say about the work has a huge impact on how people value the work, what they think about it, and ultimately, you know, whether they buy it in a lot of ways. And so I think that the more you can study storytelling, you know, figure out what a story is, what shape stories have, the more you're a student of storytelling, the more you can pick up on those, you know, those eight different plots we talked about before, you know, and fit your own work into that shape and become more powerful.
I want to talk about your Ten Commandments, but before we do, I got some kind of offbeat advice in this new book. We're talking to Austin Kleon, as author of Show Your Work. Say, read the obituaries, for example.
Yeah, this is a practice that I lifted off of a few artists I know who do this. So people ask me all the time, how do you get inspired? You know, and I find that reading about people who are dead now that did something with their lives, it rather than depresses me, it makes me want to get my butt out of bed and do something with my life, the thing that I have left. And so I encourage everyone, read the obits every morning. You know, think about the people that were here and muddled through life before you and what they did with their lives, and then get up and do something with yours.
And you also say become a documentarian of your work. Record as you go along. You use this example of a Canadian astronaut. You want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah, Commander Hetfield. He did this amazing thing when he was up in space. His son said, you know, there's this thing called social media. And why don't, when you're up at the Canadian space program is just like all other space programs. They're having trouble kind of, you know, convincing people of the value of what they do, which seems crazy because it's going up in space, right? But what Commander Hetfield decided to do is he just started, you know, kind of like shooting YouTube videos and tweeting photos of his day-to-day life up in the space station, just documenting the everyday mundane and wonderful things about his job. And in the act of doing that, he amassed this huge following. There was this big interest that grew. And it was just because he was documenting his days and putting it out there for people to see. And, you know, we're not all astronauts, but I think we can all do that to a certain extent. We can all take little snippets of our lives. And
Chris Hetfield, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking, by the way, with Austin Kleon, author of Show Your Work, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. And he's hosting a Chalk Talk and book signing at Flax Art and Design in San Francisco at 5:30 p.m. later today. Let's look at these Ten Commandments. They're on our I keep calling them the Ten Commandments. You don't have to be a genius, number one. And that's certainly true for artists, especially if you're stealing stuff.
Thank goodness on my part.
Number two, think process, not product. Number three, share something small every day. Number four, open up your cabinet of curiosities. Five, we just mentioned, tell good stories. Six, teach what you know. Let's talk about that. Teach what you know.
Yeah, so the example, I think teaching, it might be the most powerful form of sharing. And I don't think, you know, people think about teaching in terms, oh, I have to become an expert before I teach. But my feeling about teaching is something way closer to someone like what C.S. Lewis said. He said that a fellow student can teach a fellow student just as much as the expert teacher can, because they're both coming.
I go that far.
Well,
as a teacher.
As a teacher.
Yeah.
But there's something about, you know, when you learn something, when you turn around and teach it right away, you figure out what it is that you know and what you don't know. And what I find so powerful about teaching, and I'm sure you can talk about this as a teacher yourself, is that when you teach, you learn in return.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Right.
And you also say, don't turn into human spam, which I need a little bit of, I guess the listeners need a little bit of enlightenment on what you mean by that.
You know human spam. These are the people in your life. You know, the illustration I give is I took a lot of creative writing workshops in college, and there was always one person in the creative writing workshop that said, well, I really like to write, but I don't like to read. And that was the kind of person that you could write off completely. Because as we all know, if you want to be a master of your craft, you have to be a student of your craft. If you want to have fans, you have to be a fan first. And so human spam, those are the people that just, you know, they want you to hear their ideas, but they don't want to hear yours. They want to take and take, but they don't want to give.
And you say, learn to take a punch.
Yeah, so much of having your work out in the world is just an endurance match. You know, you have to be ready for the good, the bad, and the ugly that comes from being out in the world. And the way to learn to take a punch is to get hit a lot and stay in the ring.
Well, we spoke before about language, people being uncomfortable with words like steel or amateur. But then you also say, as number 9, sell out.
What I wanted to do in the sellout chapter was, one, get your attention, which that's the one people always fumble on. But I want people to kind of divorce themselves from this notion that just because you make money off art, that muddies the process. You know, some of our, you know, Michelangelo, he painted the Sistine Chapel because the Pope paid him, you know? And so there's something about...
I always use the example of Dickens, too. He wrote that stuff because he was getting paid by the word and by the paragraph and so forth.
Yeah. The Beatles, you know, they used to sit down and say, let's write a swimming pool. You know, I mean, so many of these things that we love in our lives were done for money, you know. And so I think that chapter is all about, it's not just about making money, but it's about replacing that kind of punk rock and roll idea of selling out with something like what hip hop says, which is, you're not selling out, you're blowing up.
See, you've got this great collection of, it's almost like a scrapbook in itself of things that you've drawn from. I like the story about Stravinsky. Can you tell that?
Oh, the story about Stravinsky. Yeah. So Stravinsky was about to start a new ballet. And instead of, you know, trying to sit down and write something original, he started taking some of his favorite works and he started writing over the manuscripts as if he were correcting them like a teacher, right? And so he borrowed bass lines and all these different phrases from the work. And I hope I'm not messing up the story, but when the ballet came out, you know, the critics were outraged. They said, how dare you do this to our classics? How dare you take this work and use it for your own purposes? And Stravinsky said, you respect, but I love.
Yeah, that's really delightful. You know? I was also struck by, again, you bring in a lot of anecdotes, a lot of people whom we admire. What you said about Roger Ebert, whom we knew and had on the program, who lost his voice. I mean, right. So many people talk about finding your voice and discovering your voice and so forth, particularly in terms of, say, being a creative writer, that sort of thing. He discovered a whole different voice, really, after he lost his voice.
I just found that metaphor to just be so perfect, you know, and he actually said, on the web, my true voice finds expression. And, you know, he actually said, don't pity me. This has led to an explosion of writing and an explosion of my own creativity, you know, but that idea that voice is something that you don't go out in the world and find, you only find it by using it because it's something built into you. And it's just a great story.
It's a poignant story. And when you talk, though, I mean, somebody comes to you and says, okay, I'm creating something, I'm in the process, and I hate to self-promote.
Yeah.
What's the first thing in terms of just really useful advice, practical advice that you tell them?
I tell them, forget about self-promoting and think about sharing. Share something small every day. So one of the things I do is I say, you know, say a writer comes to me, says, I hate self-promoting. So, well, what do you really love to do? Well, a lot of writers love to read, right? So one of my favorite Twitter accounts is by a guy named Sam Anderson. He writes for the New York Times. And what Sam does is every day he just tweets his favorite sentence that he read that day. And what you get from Sam's Twitter feed is not only this amazing collection of what he's reading, but you really get a feeling for what his mind is as an editor and a writer. And so, that's the first thing I tell people. If you're hung up on self-promoting, try promoting other people's work first. Share other people's work first, and then you get a feel for what it's like. And then you can start sneaking your own stuff in.
Well, you know, I obviously get a lot of self-promotion because a lot of people want to be on the radio. One of the things I've found has become almost George Orwell in Politics and English Language talked about prefabricated hen houses, you know, those kind of cliches that become such cliches that, whether even beyond platitudes, people will begin by saying, this is shameless self-promotion.
Right.
That's the introduction to the fact that they're going to be self-promoting.
Yeah.
That kind of tries to neutralize it or something. By the way, we asked listeners to tell us what you think about the tips that are coming from Austin Kleon and what you've tried to do as far as promoting your own work. We're getting some responses here, and you can send your own responses to us, kqed.org/forum. Zoe writes, you don't have to be a genius. I love that. So many people seem to think art is too intellectual and out of reach when all you have to do to be a part of a piece of art is have a feeling induced by it. Robin says about number three, share something small every day, which Austin just mentioned. Whether it's a Tumblr picture of my work, an update on my process on Facebook, a new listing on Etsy, or simply just finding an art show or competition to enter, I try to do at least one thing each day to get my pottery out there. It's amazing how the little connections we make can open up some giant doors. So there you go. And Bella writes, thank you for validating my obituary obsession. I highly recommend getting into genealogy, too, and Stories Untold.
That's interesting because I think a lot of Steal Like an Artist came out of my own interest in genealogy. I took genealogy when I was in, like, third grade, and I became obsessed with family trees. And I thought, well, you know, you have a familial genealogy, but you also have an idea and hero genealogy, too. So
I love really what you did on that with Tom Phillips and the 40-year project.
My God.
You want to talk about that? Because
yeah.
Inspired by William Burroughs, and then you get back before went all the way to Tristan Saren.
I have an interesting addition to that. So when I first started doing my blackout poems, I really wasn't aware of any precedent. But everyone said, hey, you're ripping off this one guy named Tom Phillips. So then I saturated myself with Tom Phillips' work, found out he got the idea from William Burroughs, cut-up method. William Burroughs got the cut-up method from Brian Geisen, his friend. And, you know, I just started tracing things all the way back. The interesting thing that happened recently is I heard from Tom. I got an email from Tom. And Tom, if you don't know, he taught Brian Eno, the musician. And so Tom does his own slideshow where he starts with Brian Eno. And he said, Brian Eno was taught by me, Tom Phillips, and I was taught by. And in 20 steps, he traces his lineage. It's a very British thing to do.
Yes.
He traces his lineage all the way back to Raphael. And it was so fascinating. But again, the only reason I heard from Tom and that amazing story was because I had done my own genealogy and then he had found it out in the world. You know, I showed my work, I guess.
And you use Eno in another way. You talk about the great ideas, ecology of talent, that sort of thing. Group ideas, excuse me, and ecology of talent. That's Brian Eno, too.
Yeah, I got obsessed with Eno's idea of senius versus genius. You know, Eno's idea is that art isn't made by the lone genius. It's often the result of a kind of communal genius, a lot of minds connected to other minds. And I use that for the foundation of the new book because when you think about creativity in that way, you start operating in a whole different manner. You know, your goal then is to become part of a network and part of a community and to make that community as strong and robust as you can, and that makes your work better.
Well, we are a network. We're part of NPR. We're also a community here of the Nine Bay Area counties and beyond, and if you're listening, you can tell us what you think about some of these tips of what you've done to try to promote your own work, and you can also join us with any questions or comments you might have. In fact, we welcome you joining the conversation and invite you to do that. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. You don't have to be an artist to join the program or even a would-be artist. We welcome your calls. Again, that toll-free number to join us now is 866-733-6786. You can also communicate with us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or posting any questions or comments you might have right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But we do welcome your involvement in the program. And, again, if you've just joined us, our guest is Austin Kleon, and his new book is Show Your Work. And we want to mention also, give him some promotion here. He's going to be hosting a Chalk Talk and book signing at Flax Art and Design in San Francisco today at 5:30 p.m. And we'll find out what you have to say about all this. Artists, would-be artists, just people who are interested in the creative process and interested in the whole ideas that we are kind of floating around here about stealing ideas as well as making your own ideas out of originality and transforming whatever you purloin or thieve. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour with Austin Kleon, who advises artists, show your work. And perhaps few challenges intimidate artists as much as promoting their own work. But his first book urged creative type people to steal like an artist. And he's back with advice now on how artists can get noticed and says his tips, which range from teach what you know to learn to take a punch, are palpable to even those who hate self-promotion. So if you're an artist, tell us what's worked and what hasn't as far as getting your work noticed. And again, Austin Kleon will be hosting a Chalk Talk and book signing at Flax Art and Design in San Francisco at 5:30 tonight. What's a
chalk talk exactly? There's a different than a PowerPoint. You got a chalk in your hand instead?
Well, it's kind of metaphorical chalk talk. Today I'll probably be using an easel and a Sharpie. But yeah, the chalk talk, it's just drawing and talking at the same time. It's very dangerous. It can get a little Bob Rossy, you know, but we'll do our best.
You're a cartoonist in your heart, aren't you?
At heart, I feel like studying cartoons and the cartooning language and comics really gave me a foundation for my work, but I don't consider myself a cartoonist. You know, I feel I'm a student of cartooning.
You did the cartoons in this book, though, yeah?
I did, yeah. I did all the drawings and the illustrations.
Let's go to our callers, and we start out with you, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. What I wanted to ask is, or I'd love to hear your comments on this, is that I'm a teacher of architecture at the Academy of Arts, and I'm also a painter and musician, all this stuff. And I often teach the kids that there are no, that genius is a 19th century term, and it's no longer useful. And I'd love to hear your comments on that. But one more point, that the opportunities to actually do art and to show art, whether it's playing in a coffee house as a musician or exhibiting my architectural painting, I think in this era of the 1% and the 99%, there are increasingly limited opportunities. And I've tried to find ways of just continuing to do work independent of that, which is why I love your book. But I'd love your comments on genius and the second comment as well, and I'll hang up the phone. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Yeah, that idea of the genius. I mean, my problem with the idea of genius is it doesn't have a lot to teach us. Because what genius tells us is that people are put on this earth with talent and right flowing in their DNA and that it all comes easy. And there's just not a lot to learn from a genius.
Well, I'm wondering, though, you know, when I think of genius, I think of people like Einstein.
Right.
They used to call Al Davis, the coach and owner. He was a coach before he was an owner of the Raiders, a genius, a football genius. I mean, there are chess geniuses and football geniuses. There are geniuses in different fields. Einstein was a genius in physics. I mean, it's a way of certainly elevating that person to the status he or she deserves.
But genius is contextual. You know, these people operate in a context and they operate in a world. And so I think too often when we talk about genius, we divorce the person. You know, the person becomes a mountain and they become this like lone figure.
You want to disband Mensa? Is that what you want?
I don't know. No, I just think that especially for people starting out, I mean, one of the things that when I was a young artist is that I wouldn't worry too much about these geniuses. I would just look towards the people. I mean, I'm really influenced by like punk rock and the whole DIY movement of the 80s. And so for me, that's a whole different model for art. That's about, you know, making stuff with what you have.
So you're saying you can get intimidated by genius unnecessarily so, or you can be thwarted, say, from looking toward the popular culture or other sources where you can get material.
Well, you know, I feel like you can't really turn yourself into a genius, you know.
That's for sure.
So for me, it was always instructive to look at people who were a little bit more, you know, had modest talents like my own and figure out what they did with them, you know. And I think the majority of us are not geniuses. And so why not learn from each other instead of those big, you know, Mount Rushmore type
figures? That's very egalitarian. Also. He had a second point, the caller, though.
Yeah. If I got it right, he was saying that the opportunities are decreasing.
Yeah.
I think he was talking about for making a living from art. And that's something I really try to emphasize with people. You are not guaranteed a living from your art. You know,
not only a living. I want to emphasize something else that I think too many artists expect. I work so hard and I should get recognition.
Right.
There's no correlation. It's not a cause and effect. Because you work hard, because you even may be a genius, you're not necessarily going to get recognition.
Yeah. I mean, you know, think about someone like Melville. You know, Melville had some very, you know, popular works. And then he went and wrote Moby Dick. Moby Dick came out and failed. And, you know, Melville ended up pretty penniless when he died and forgotten. And that wasn't until the 1920s when all those writers rediscovered Melville that, you know, his genius was acknowledged and the work, and Moby Dick became the book it is, you know. So history is the thing that, you know, will judge you ultimately. But see, for me, I don't care about history because I'm going to be dead in the ground. So for me, I'm interested in creating a community right now around my work, and I'm interested right now in building something that can benefit me now and finding some way that I can benefit other people right now.
See, he reads all those obituaries, and that's that's what you come to. Let me bring another caller on here. This is Nima. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a point. You know, you mentioned Einstein, and I'm a scientist myself. And in science community, everyone has been building on top of other people's work, and a lot of geniuses like Einstein have built on works on Newton and also other, you know, people. And I just wanted to see how I could relate to the idea of stealing, being creative, being genius because of that.
Yeah, I mean, Newton, I think it was Newton himself who said, if I've seen further, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants.
Those were his words.
Right?
That's right. Yeah.
This brings us to a really interesting point. I mean, hearing from a scientist, I don't think the ideas in Show Your Work are just applicable to quote-unquote creative fields or just artists. You know, I really feel like a lot of what I write about in here, I hope that people in other, you know, other fields and other disciplines take something from it. But scientists, you know, and there's an interesting phenomenon in which scientists will arrive at the same discovery at the same time. You know, that kind of, so that's always interesting too.
It's also, you can't dismiss the importance of the zeitgeist with science or with artistic creativity in general. I mean, it's the air we breathe, the spirit of the times and all of that sort of thing. By the way, is it strange with the name Austin living in Austin?
It's super strange. I mean, you know, I always joke with people that Austin's been a family name longer than Texas has been a state. Texans hate that, by the way, when I say that.
Texans hate anything that diminishes Texas.
That's right, yeah. But Texas has been interesting to me how I've been able to, you know, when I was a poet in Cleveland, no one cared. And then I moved to Texas, and I was a weirdo from Texas, and then all of a sudden people paid attention.
We have something in common. When I was a poet in Cleveland, nobody cared either. Let me get a would-be poet, I should say. Linda, good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I'm really enjoying this show. Thank you very much. And I was wondering, if you want to avoid social media, if you don't want to be on the internet, are you out of luck as far as sharing your work? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thank you for the question. Austin Kleon.
I don't think you're totally out of luck, but you are missing a tremendous opportunity to own your own media, to run your own little empire, and to reach people directly. The one interesting thing, though, is I want to go back to that idea of the DIY and punk scene in the 80s, is what I realized is that so much of what's happening in social media now was happening back then with things like photocopied zines that people would make at Kinko's and mail to each other, or, you know, bands who were able to tour and build a little grassroots network, you know, across the country. I see all of that as the seeds of what now everyone has access to with social media. But I think that, you know, today our main medium is the web. Like, that is how so much interesting work is being put out there, and that's how we're all connected. And I think if you turn your back on it, you're kind of hobbling yourself.
Reading a tweet here from Leona who says, Cleon's advice not only applies to artists, but any creative mind. One thing to add, make things with good social impact. And looking at an email from Brian who says, as an artist, like any position, it's about who you know. It has to be natural. You can't spam those who would help you.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. I was trying to go back to what that gal just said, but I'm forgetting now. You know, my whole thing has always been, if you make work that you love, that you truly love, if you take your influences and try to make something that honors them, you will run into the people who love those things too and love that kind of work. And that's what putting your work out in the world is about. What you're really trying to do is you're trying to find your crew. You know, you're trying to find your people. And I think that, you know, if
your tribe.
Yeah, your tribe, to use Seth Godin's term, you know. But I think that you have to remain true to what you honestly love, because if you just make work that you think will sell, or you just make work that you think will go over well with the zeitgeist or whatever, you won't meet those real people who will feed you in your life. You know, you won't meet your tribe or your real posse. You'll just meet the zeitgeist.
I like to mention from time to time about my failing career at trying to be a novelist, such as it is or was. And one of the things I tried to do one summer was I read all this schlocky stuff, you know, Jackie Collins and Harold Robbins and Sidney Sheldon and
right.
just devoured all those. And I thought, this is all formulaic. I could sit down and do that. Can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't do it. If you're writing just with the object of doing something that you don't have inside of you, or doing any kind of creative work that you don't have inside of you, it's not only an uphill battle, it's often really quite futile.
Yeah.
Here's Jay who writes, the secret to, he quotes Twain. And by the way, we'll be talking about Mark Twain tomorrow. Ben Tarnoff, who's done a book on Bohemians,
awesome.
Will be on with us. So there's a plug for tomorrow's
cool.
10 o'clock. But Jay writes, quoting Twain, the secret to creativity is hiding your sources. Does your guest find any value in keeping sources hidden?
You know, I used to when I was younger and I was a little bit, you know, but I was, you know, I wanted to be more of a genius, right? But now I find that sharing your influences just makes the work more powerful because it places it in a context. And, you know, for me, it's always been a kind of values thing. It's been really important for me to honor my influences and to be open and forthright about them because I just think that adds to the work. I don't think it takes away from it.
Let me read a few more emails here. Caroline writes, I picked up Show Your Work, skeptical that it had anything in it that pertained to me. I saw my illustrator friends using Twitter and Facebook and Instagram so effectively, but I was a novelist, so... what was I going to do? Write a sentence for my book every day? But Austin's book showed me how even long-form writers can communicate so much over social media. I recommend it to all my stodgy novelist friends now. Gina tweets, love Austin Kleon, especially the line about finding your verb and doing that every day. Thank you. Patrick writes, what's your view on humility as opposed to arrogance? Sometimes people get a punch for lots of reasons, but many times it's because of arrogance and shameful self-promotion. It is something that I think many struggle with in terms of pushing oneself out there, but being careful not to turn people off. For me, I think it's much easier to have someone else tell my story.
Oh, you know, I mean, I'm a Midwesterner, you know, so humility is a big deal for me. And I think, you know, going back, that's kind of why I like to show my influences. You know, I feel like in the act of showing my influences and showing my process, I'm not attempting to be that braggart. I'm not, you know, trying to say it's me, me, me. It's just look at these things that I love and look at what I've done with them, you know. And I think that for me is the humility part, is acknowledging that I'm part of something bigger. I'm part of this, you know, river that's flowing through time or whatever.
Also making
kind of
that work that you've done sort of like giving birth to something that's apart from you, too. I mean, that you want it out in the world, that
yeah.
you want to be recognized.
Oh, man.
Seen.
What you just said, I mean, you know, that's what I try to, you know, tell people is like when you make things, it's not you. It's just something that you've made. And the more that you can kind of like, and that's really hard for artists
people
to understand.
People don't separate their ego in so many cases.
Yeah, they just can't get their ego out of the work. And if you think about your work as something that you made and now it's out in the world and it's going to do its own thing, you know, people like to use the child birthing, you know, metaphor for making work. Oh, they're my babies or whatever. But if you're a good parent, what you're doing is you're trying to create this being that can stand on its own and go out in the world and do its own thing, and you have to let it go eventually.
You want its independence, but
yeah.
it's really hard. I mean, especially when you know, what was difficult for me, I think I've finally come to terms with it, was the books that I did were not – one was reviewed by the Washington Post, but most of the Eastern establishment, I call it the Eastern Bloc, ignored me, and I kind of took it personally.
Right.
Why is the New York Times and New Yorker and New York Review of Books, why aren't they reviewing my book? Reason was whatever the reason was, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, to take it personally is foolish. On April Fool's Day, there are important things about reckoning with being a fool. Here's Ellen who writes, as far as humility goes, our book club read Angle of Repose, and we found several lines from a Hawthorne poem a member wrote to Styron. Styron wrote back and said, you caught me, I stole it in cold blood. It's interesting because Stegner did some stealing too, of course.
Interesting, yeah, yeah.
Lisa asks, what was the name of the guy he recommended following his Twitter feed, New York Times editor? I guess it was Sam Anderson.
Oh, yeah, Sam Anderson. And his Twitter handle is Shamble Anderson. Just search for Sam Anderson Twitter, though. You'll find it.
Let me go to more of your calls. We go to Hunter's Point Shipyard. Stacy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm a mid-career artist here out at the Shipyard, and I just wanted to, this is a great program for younger artists, I can't even tell you, but I just wanted to share how I got my start in my career, which is, you know, open studios, doing open studios. You know, I had a day job when I started out here in the early 90s, and But I still, worked as an artist and maintained a studio just because that's what I did, even though I made a living otherwise. But having an Open Studios event, two times a year would, A, give me a point to work towards, that I would show my work to the public and, get a body of work done twice a year, which is great. But then the other thing that, last thing I expected was that, that's how my gallery found me. I actually got a phone call one day, after doing Open Studios for 3 or 4 years, from the George Kresge Gallery, and they wanted to give me a show in Introductions 2002. And so, it just showing the work, as well as, the Open Studios is just a really great way if you're starting out, because for me, it really helped me develop the body of work based on the reactions that people would have to it. So I couldn't have chosen the direction or on my own without, hearing feedback from people and, listening, watching what they responded to. And that really sort of, helped me develop, over the years.
You are confirming what Austin Kleon is all about in this book.
I want to linger on this for 1 minute, because I think the idea of an open studio, the writers or the artists that I really admire, they basically have a global daily open studio. You really feel like you're there in the room with them a lot. I mean, so many of the painters that I love, they're someone like Oliver Jeffers, who does a children's book. He has an amazing Instagram feed where he's like, here's the painting I'm working on today. It's like being in the studio with him. But then the other thing I think she said that's so wonderful is that having something to, when you have an outlet like an open studio, it gives you something to work from or work towards. And one of the things I love about blogging is the minute I started a blog, all of a sudden I thought, oh crap, I have to fill this with something. And it was the impetus to make more work. A lot of people think that being online, it's going to take away from your work. But I found by having that outlet, you have to figure out what to fill it with. And that just boosts your, your productivity.
Stacey, thank you for the call, and good luck with your ongoing process.
Yeah, thank
creating.
You.
Couple interesting comments. Nora corrects me, and thank you, Nora. I must have misspoke. Dickens was not paid by the word, she says, and she's right. He owned Household Words and other publications in which the serialized installments were published. He was strict about their length. That is absolutely right. Ken writes, I find nothing wrong with being influenced by what came before. After all, would we have West Side Story without Romeo and Juliet? You can see the provenance clearly, but they're not identical. Actual plagiarism is taking your work and making minimal or no changes and then passing it off as your own. The internet makes it possible to steal someone's work and pass it off as your own, if simply by copying and pasting. If I were a professional photographer, it would drive me insane to see my work replicated incessantly without my permission.
I've always thought that forgery is a more interesting metaphor for work than plagiarism, because plagiarism is just, like you said, taking someone else's work and putting your name on it. What I like about forgery is the idea of forgery is to take something that, supposedly someone could have made and make it. So, so much of my work has been like, okay, here are my heroes. What would they have made that they didn't get around to? Or if I put all my heroes in a room and they jam together, what would they make? And that's my work. And in a way, it's more of a kind of forgery than a plagiarism. But forgery and plagiarism are flip sides of the same coin.
I like that. Corey, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a visual artist, and I find that the idea of being in dialogue with the community, of course, it's really important. And, as artists, we're constantly need to be in dialogue with each other and with the work of the past. But I also feel like we need to be in dialogue with people outside the artistic community, to talk to scientists, to talk to, people who, have the most ordinary jobs and lives you can possibly have, if there is such a thing, and, just a whole range of people, so that your art is speaking to people generally, not just to other artists, because I think there's this incestuous thing that happens when you're doing art about art to other artists.
Yeah.
I think she's got a good point.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. So first, people ask me all the time because they hear I'm from Austin and they get very excited, like, oh, Austin, that's supposed to be this like happening place. And like, oh, does it feed your art? Like, is it so inspiring to you? And I say, it's inspiring to me, but in ways that you might not think. Like, for instance, I don't hang out with a lot of cartoonists. I don't hang out with a lot of writers. I don't hang out with a lot of visual artists in Austin. The people I hang out with are like designers or tech people or musicians or filmmakers. or just people doing, like, you know, one of my friends is in public radio, you know, just people who are doing different things than what I'm doing. And I find that the more disciplines I interact with, that's where the really great ideas come from. So I totally endorse what she just said, which is get outside your discipline and don't just make work for people in your discipline. Make work, you know, think bigger.
Yeah, I was thinking about Faulkner, you know, who there in Oxford, Mississippi, had almost no contact with any other writers and was usually alone in a room drinking or in a bar drinking. And whichever way it was, you know, he was exposing himself to many of the people who, you know, peopled his creativity and got into his imagination. Here's Dan, who writes, last year I delivered a lecture on digital publishing at Adobe in San Jose and used a page that I stole from your book, The World is a Small Town, to frame my story that these artists needed to help one another along in this new technology, and my point was well received. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
The world is a small town?
Yeah. You know, this is the Midwesterner in me coming out again, right? I've just found that, you know.
Like John Cougar Mellencamp?
Born, you know, be nice, because you don't know who is going to, don't burn bridges, you know. You just don't know who's going to come back around and be someone that you want to know. I mean, it's been really interesting. My career online is that I've watched people who at first I thought, eh, I'm not really into their work and I didn't think they were super talented. And then 5 years of work go by and all of a sudden they're making incredible work, you know, not to name any names, but you can't write anyone off, you know.
It's good advice. Johnny on Facebook writes, show your work? Well, I'm a painter. And I've been using the vast photo archives on eBay for inspiration for my series Swimming Pool Moments. The deep shared experience we have around water is evidenced in the thousands of snapshots of folks in and around pools. It's a soulful experience to find these images and translate them through my prism to the canvas. See my work at facebook.com/musgrovepainting.
Oh, getting a little spammy. Getting a little human spammy there, but no, it's good.
Here's another listener who writes, I agree with what you say about selling out. I worked as a painter for a few years after I ended school, and now I work as a fashion designer and was hired because of my artistic ability. I draw everything and design from the mind. But for some reason that is not good enough for people, I am no longer considered a serious artist to people. But I wouldn't be where I was if I didn't practice art every single day.
Wow.
I am more of an artist now than I was when I was solely painting. I still do both, but people think less of you when you actually make money for your artistic talent.
Yeah.
Ironically, the first question anyone asks me when I say I'm an artist, how do you make money?
Right. I mean, you know, what she just said is so, like, I mean, the thing that I think people get hung up on is, again, they get hung up on the nouns. I have to be a painter. You know, but if you think about what you really like to do, the verb, like for me, it's putting pictures and words together. And if I just focus on that, the fields that I can be successful in, the nouns that I can become, it really opens up.
Well, we've got another iconoclast here in terms of correcting that famous quote from Newton, because I stood on the backs of giants, David says, was actually a snide remark directed by Robert Hooke, whom he despised. Although an undisputed genius, Newton was, in Huxley, Aldous Huxley's words, a superb monster. The work that Newton really drew from was Euclid, from which he built the calculus.
Wow.
And Charles writes, very fashionable these days to be open source, but I suspect that the biggest proponents of that attitude are not the most creative, but the most adept at stealing like an artist and self-promotion.
Wow.
This then rewards not creativity, but salesmanship.
Interesting.
Another listener, Rachel, says, I'm working as an oil painter in the Bay Area, and I find the most important quality is resilience and a solid work ethic. I paint at least 5 days a week, 6 to 8 hours a day. Of my artist friends, the most successful ones tend to be in love with their craft. The reward has to be in the process, not the payout.
The daily practice.
Yeah.
The verb.
But let's take that other email about how, you know, there's that idea of selling out. I mean, some people feel if you're actually making money, somehow you've lost, I don't know, the grace or the halo of being an artist. You're not a true artist because you're making money. You're commercial.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can I think what happens, you know, more than the making money thing is that there's a lot of administrative tasks that come from artistic success that you're not quite ready for when you're unknown. Once people know about you and they're interested in your work, all of a sudden people are contacting you all the time and there's a whole business to run. And I think what throws people off the most is they get away from that daily practice, that noun. you know, and they're or they're the verb. I'm sorry.
I do.
You know, yeah. But you know, and so for me, like for instance, you know, I'm out on the road. I feel like a traveling salesman. You know, doing my book. And
you
so,
are.
And I am. Yeah. And so one of the things that I've been working really hard on is trying to figure out how I can have that daily practice even when I'm on the road.
That's tough.
It's really hard.
Do you know Tom Wolfe's The Painted Word?
No.
Oh, because the listener Tom wants to know about it. It was a book back in the 70s on art criticism, and he said that modern art of the 70s was shifting away from a visual experience, becoming an illustration of critical theories.
Oh, wow.
It's worth reading.
Okay. I'm writing that down right now.
And Robert from Oakley asked, from whom did the abstract expressionist steal?
I don't know enough about abstract expressionists to tell you.
Well, they did steal.
Yeah.
They stole. So you're going to be doing this event later today, and what are you going to be talking about? This, what we talked about and more?
Yeah, I'm going to be drawing a lot of the concepts that kind of form the foundation of the book, and then hopefully, you know, my favorite part of giving talks is hearing back from the audience. So I hope people show up at FLAX and have good questions and push me, and we'll draw and talk and listen.
And what's next for you?
I don't know. You know, people ask that question of artists. I don't think doctors or lawyers get asked that question. You know, someone's going to break their leg. Someone's going to get divorced. I figure I'll probably write another book, but I'm not sure what it is yet.
Well, I feel exactly the same
way.
Right? And you hope that the whatever it is in terms of creativity or the ignition that gets you started will actually once again ignite.
Yeah.
Good to have you here. A lot
thanks,
of fun.
Thanks
a lot
for
of,
having
interesting
me.
Interesting to talk to you. Thank you for being with us.
It's a real pleasure.
Again, Austin Kleon's book, his new book is Show Your Work. And I should remind you, listeners, that we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. And you can always continue this conversation online, kqed.org/forum. And you can let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or would like to hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.